early on, you come in and say, and people were expecting answers, like, okay, what are the changes that are going to make this work? And of course, I didn't really know what would be the changes in that sense. But I think it's almost creating a culture in which it's okay just to have a go. As long as we're not losing grasp of the gospel here, but we've put in place some healthy systems and structures, and and what we just are convinced is healthy for a local church, then actually just having some space together to just try some stuff and it be okay for it not
to. Did you try
work.
Things that didn't work?
No, of course not.
Hello and welcome to Independence FIEC, a podcast for church leaders. Very glad that you can join us today. And I'm joined by two good friends. Thank you so much, Graham Bynan, for joining us.
Nice
so tell
you.
Us who you are, Graham.
Graham Bynan, Associate National Director, one of two, the other one of which is Adrian Reynolds.
It's me. Hello. How much fun this is. And John James. Hello, John. How lovely
Hello.
To see you.
Nice to be with you.
You've come to the centre of England here.
Yes.
Market Harborough. From the greatest city in the country, Birmingham, is that right?
That's
Something
right.
Something like that?
Yeah.
John, tell us where you are right at the moment.
So I am the lead pastor of City Church, Birmingham, where I've been for the last 5 years.
Great. 5 years?
Yeah.
Goodness, that's gone quickly, hasn't it?
It really has.
We're so glad you can join us. We're not here today to talk primarily about City Church, Birmingham, though there's a part in the story along the way. We're here to talk about church planting, and we're here to talk about one particular kind of church plant, which is what we call before a replant. Just remind us, Graham, why this is good to be listening to this story.
Yeah, we want to see more churches around the country. Everyone, even if they might not be involved directly in planting, we want to be concerned for, praying for planting around the country. And many of us will know smaller, struggling, but faithful churches nearby where a replant or a revitalization, as it's sometimes called, could be suitable. Or maybe we'd send congregation members to help in that kind of venture. And so there's a whole variety of ways in which we could be involved.
Indeed. So if we're concerned for the cause of the gospel, which we should all be, we're concerned for church planting.
Yeah.
And if we're concerned for church planting, we're concerned for churches that apparently seem to be neglected and dwindling, but actually there is still life and there is still hope. And that's what we're hoping to hear the story of. So John, tell us how you came to be involved in this sort of world, first of all. How did that all come about?
Well, I mean, where do you want me to begin? You know, my great-grandparents. No, I guess I was at Bible College at Oak Hill in North London, having been sent really by City Church, where I'm now.
Indeed. Pastor. So there is a connection.
I didn't imagine we would go back to Birmingham, but I married a Brummie. Which was a good start.
Yes. Yeah.
And actually, we began talking with the church that we then went to about whether there was a possibility of going there and leading a church revitalization project at that point. At the same time, Neil Powell, who was the pastor at City Church at the time, one of the pastors there, had just begun to talk about something called 2020 Birmingham, which was really a collaborative effort to see churches planted in the city. And so we began talking about that. We were talking with this church and we just wondered whether maybe that was the
Who started that conversation? It seems to me with the question of replants, there's so many, there seem to be, looking in from the outside, so many obstacles and hurdles to overcome, so many cultural differences perhaps, or people worried about takeover, you know, all sorts of things we'll come to in just a moment. Who initiated those discussions with the church?
Well, Sarah, my wife's parents, were members of that church.
Okay.
And they had seen down the road, basically Grace Church planted in Sturchley Cotteridge. Yep. And that had been a kind of sister church of Hellier Chapel, which is the church we went to. Former brethren, now kind of just independent evangelical, but also kind of close to the end of their lives. And Grace Church had planted into that building, and then slowly the church that the other church that was there, Dell Road, joined them. And so they'd seen that happen down the road, and they basically, Sarah's parents were kind of saying, well, we kind of need something like that. That's what we need. But of course, we didn't really want to put them in the middle of that conversation. And so I'd preached there a few times. I knew the one remaining elder at the church, Tony,
well enough to just, so I just basically picked up the phone, Adrian, which was and kind of a bit presumptuous in a way, but I kind of said, look, would you be at all open to just having a conversation?
Okay. So it was very providential, really, in a way, the way things came together.
It was providential, yeah. And I think that first conversation was, it kind of needed me almost to not take the lead, but take the initiative. I think because the church had, in a sense, been used to just manage decline for a long period of time, I think they just couldn't imagine another possibility, really. I think seeing Grace Church made them think, okay, maybe there is another possibility.
So you've described different ingredients there, which I'm just going to come and ask you about this in a moment, Graham. You've described a relational connection with the church through Sarah's parents. So you knew about it and they knew you, obviously. Yeah. I think they came to the wedding, did they?
They did. Okay.
So there was a relational connection there. There was seeing someone else doing it. And so something that had given them confidence that this wouldn't just be a reverse takeover and it will all end in disaster. Exactly. So they'd seen an example. Exactly. And there was a champion on the ground.
Yeah.
So I know some of these things are overlaps, obviously, in Sarah's parents, but there was someone there saying, no, folks, we have got to, it's not necessarily John, we have got to think about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
How intrinsic are those elements to this kind of story in replanting?
Yeah, I think in replants, you can begin in lots of different places.
Yeah.
Some churches realize where they're at, effectively as where your parents-in-law got to, but maybe the leadership would approach a local church and say, we left to ourselves, we're going nowhere, we need help. Mm. Other times a church might send preachers and develop a relationship that way, and then maybe the sort of suggestion you made, would you ever consider? Sometimes it's more complicated relationships like here, but something which puts churches in touch with each other. But the key thing is that the church on the ground that needs the replant, as it were, recognizes that in some way, and the idea is put on the table. And it needs to be put on the table in a very open way, as John obviously did. If they want to say no, it's up to them. It's their church. But the idea is there, and then the offer of something. And from that point on, it's all exploring together.
Yeah. So here you are, John, beginning to do that, beginning to explore together. Yeah. Tell us what some of the steps are then that were kind of milestones along that path.
So, I mean, one of the things was, I think, that just the extent to which there was some realization amongst the church family themselves that this was something they wanted, this was something that was possibly even.
Was that important
needed.
To you as well?
It was important. I mean, I think it was important that it was the case amongst the leadership, not necessarily shared by the whole church. I think that's probably not necessarily always going to be the case. And so I think it was important because then it allowed for a sort of a mandate for change, really. Not change for the sake of it, but just, changes that we felt were probably going to be needed for this to kind of start a new chapter, really. And so that was important. So we talked a lot about that. I mean, I think sometimes people talk about the need to almost diagnose kind of the past and what went wrong and all that sort of thing. We didn't really do much of that. I'm not sure that's necessarily essential. I think sometimes it's quite hard actually to diagnose precisely what's gone wrong. And I know
hard in sort of a painful way, or just difficult to do.
Just difficult to do. I mean, I think it is painful at times. And sometimes there's an obvious thing, and that just probably does need to be kind of talked about and confessed and that sort of thing. But I think very often it's just, I mean, Paul Mallard talks about kind of 1,000 decisions to pay
safe. So it's got some small incremental things that have... I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because when we talk about building a healthy church, it's often 1,000 incremental things that work positively.
Yeah, exactly.
But equally, as a church gets itself into decline, it's 1,000 tiny things that have led it there.
Completely. Yeah. And so then with that, then a discussion, a conversation about what a shared expectation of kind of some of the changes might be looking forward. Now, I actually didn't really know. I mean, I was fresh out of Bible
college. I was going to say, you're kind of a newbie at this point. I mean, you're not kind of typical,
Adrian, it was,
let's get someone experienced who can come and help us. Oh, no, we've got John James.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and honestly, they looked at me. I was like a little child, really, in their eyes, I'm sure. And
you're still very young to me.
The only thing I had going for me was that I'd married Sarah. And they loved Sarah, And so they were willing to give me a go,
I mean, don't downplay that, because when there is that relational capital, that counts for something, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you need to have capital in the bank to do this.
Yeah.
And that capital comes from different places.
Yeah. So I think having Tony, who was the one elder in the church, you know, he was a real champion for this. He cushioned a lot of the buzz. He was almost like a shock absorber coming in, which was a really, really significant role that he played.
On what kinds of things?
I think just the kind of, I mean, maybe not so much on specific decisions as just the kind of anxiety level, maybe, of someone coming in and what's change going to look like and what's it going to mean and that sort of
thing. So he was able to be reassuring to the to the regulars.
Yeah, that this was, you know, that actually, well, in one sense, it was a bit of a kind of what's the alternative moment, really. They'd given themselves, they would have said 2 years to kind of die gracefully. Mm. And so...
What sort of size were they at this point?
They were 15.
Okay.
All retirement age.
Yeah.
At that point. Okay. There was a little bit of a wider fringe. And then when we arrived, we realized, actually, there's a bigger fringe than this. They were just, had kind of given up on the church.
What, sorry, let me just interrupt you. What made you want to take that on? I mean... You know, we're friends at college, not just saying, are you completely and utterly mad?
Yeah, I mean, most people were, were not that encouraging about us doing it. I think, I mean, it's a funny one, isn't it? I think, honestly, it was the call of God, really, on my life. I'd preached a number, like, as I'd, in a sense, been growing as a preacher, I'd been sent out and preached at lots and lots of these smaller struggling churches in the area. And every time I visited a church like that, there was something in me that just kind of could see, here are a faithful group of God's people. They love the Lord's word. They love the Lord Jesus. They love this community, but they're just kind of out of ideas. They're lost, really. There's no leadership here or vision. And I think that that somehow just really spoke to me, I think. And so when this kind of, for me, it strangely felt like a bit of a no-brainer, really. And I remember kind of, I think the addition of kind of talking it through with Neil as he was beginning kind of 2020 Birmingham made me sort of think, well, there's going to be some friends in the city as well. That was going to be important. Okay. Just some,
so you didn't feel like you were going to something that you're completely alone. It wasn't desert island territory.
No, exactly. And then we did talk with a couple of other local churches in Birmingham and just say, this is what we're hoping to do. Is there anyone in your church who you just think might be suitable, might be the right kind of person for this?
What sort of response did you get from that?
We had three other couples join us. So we were the only ones with kids at the time. There were no children in the church. So we kind of restarted, I guess, the kind of Sunday school there. But there were three couples who joined us from two other churches. And actually, they're all still there at the church now. And one of them serving as an elder and that kind of thing. So they were great. You know, they, in a sense, it sort of captured the imagination of just the right kind of people who'd be willing to kind of be there for the long haul. So I think all of that helped with it. I don't know really beyond that. I mean, I remember sharing the idea with Sarah and she just said, this is either the worst idea in the world or exactly what the Lord wants us to do.
That's often the way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Graham, let me just ask you about something there, because something John said just interested me greatly about Tony and how he's just sort of cushioning the blow, speaking about change in general. I think very often we want to get into the specifics. You're going to find A hard. You're going to find B hard. Mm. We've got to change C and D if we're going to, you know, come back to life. But there is merit, isn't there, in thinking about more generally and pastorally, just finding life difficult, finding change difficult. How do we manage change? Yeah. Is there a danger we get to the specifics too quickly sometimes?
I think this is one of the real challenges in a replant situation. All leadership is relational, but you're in a process of forming a relationship.
Yeah. Right, at the same time.
And all change is aided by trust. But you're in the process of gaining trust. So how specific do you get? How quickly? Because if you push too hard too quickly, you say, we're going to have to change A, B, and C. And people go, oh, I can't. Oh, what, who are you to say that? And I can't handle, you know.
Yeah.
And yet, if you don't ever get there, you could be in danger of actually having developed a relationship, yeah. being in place, then starting to change things, and people start to say, well, I didn't know this would happen. And so there is a there's a path to walk there in terms of getting to know people, winning their trust, yeah. And being able to lead them forward, but being straightforward about the fact there would be change. Mm. Having an ally internally
yeah.
who already has that relationship and trust is then a wonderful okay. thing to work
yeah.
with.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're not yeah. trying to build that trust, and you're basically not putting money in the bank and taking it out at the same time.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yes, which is a good way to save. Yeah. Yeah. John, what sorts of things did have to change in the church? Just yeah. give us some of the headlines. Name changed. I noticed.
We changed the name. But,
did you do that from the outset?
No, we didn't. We did that 5 years in.
5 years.
Recognizing okay. that the church was something different at okay. this point.
Interesting. So you didn't go in. That wasn't kind of plan A.
No, actually, the name change was in one sense signaling to us all as a church that we'd kind of been through a process together.
Right.
And although change was kind of ongoing, as yes. it always is in the life of a church, the sort of revitalization project,
yeah.
as it was that we'd kind of all embarked upon, was kind of, we'd
arrived
at some... We'd,
yeah,
we'd,
lovely
I just
story.
Thought it was kind of important that we did that together. Yeah. And in a way, the funny thing was the name change was sort of the least controversial change that we ever brought in. But I found that really kind of affirming yeah. in a way, just thinking, actually, we...
But maybe, really, I think there's some wisdom there in not going in with that as day one, because actually a name in some sense is neither here nor there
yeah.
compared to some of the things that have to change. Is that right, Graham?
I think that is right. I think some people talk about markers, yeah. like if you wouldn't let this go,
yeah.
why not?
Okay, so it can be a little test case.
So it doesn't really matter
no.
in and of itself, but it could be a test case.
Okay. Mm.
So some people ask of a kind of the kind of group that's there, you know, what is most precious to you? What would you not want to change?
Mm.
And it might be, of course, those are, you know, they might say things like preaching of the word and dependence on God in prayer, in which case you're saying yeah, amen.
Amen.
But they might say, this particular meeting we have, or yeah. the fact we have the organ or something, in which case you might want to gently pick away at that. Mm. So it could be a test case, but you don't have to change it. And I think in your story, it's a lovely picture of that first
yeah,
phase
I love that.
Of
yeah.
revitalization
yeah,
I love that. Yeah. being completed. What, yeah. what were some of the things you were leaning into though
yeah.
to change early?
So I think there were probably three areas really. So one was just thinking, well, where does change come from in the end? It's the Lord who changes us. And so we put God's word really at the very heart of our life together. And in practical terms, that meant actually we were no longer reliant on visiting speakers every
right.
week,
okay.
but they were going to have to put up with my preaching. At
so were they getting a sort of smorgasbord of a bit yeah. of this, a bit of that?
And, yeah. Okay. And so we moved very deliberately to kind of in-house, me preaching, leading through the preaching of the word,
yeah.
Week in and week out, going through a teaching program
yeah,
that,
yeah.
and that sort of thing. And so that was a big change for them. That was significant. But I kind of thought if we don't do that at the very outset, then really actually my ability to lead is kind of...
Yeah. Was that a hard thing or did people respond to that? You would think that would be something that people respond to quite quickly.
I mean, I was fresh out of Bible. I must have been the most boring preacher in the world in comparison to some of the guys that they loved and were,
Yeah, been around the block.
I was probably long-winded, not so clear, but they were generous, they were kind, and I think there was enough in what we were trying to do together. I think they could see what we were trying to do, and I yep. think that was enough. So there was that. I think the other areas where we changed things quite quickly were just in terms of trying to have a clear way to make healthy decisions together. So that almost that kind of then laid the path for any change that we brought in.
Yeah.
And so the church had never had membership. The church had no constitution. It had no formal statement of faith. And so we just kind of brought everything in gently, but kind of quite swiftly, actually, in order to then kind of constitute as a church, be recognized as a charity, but also make decisions in a healthy way together. Mm. And I think that was a significant thing, but that was quite a lot of work quite quickly for us. And then I think the third thing was just in terms of evangelism and discipleship, basically saying, what would be a pathway from kind of very first contact in our community, this community that we love, all the way through to kind of, you know, thriving, flourishing church member. Yeah. What kind of a pathway would we need to have in place for that to happen? And the church had partnered with Birmingham City Mission in former years, and they'd actually started a youth work on the Friday night, which had been running for a few years, and had gathered kind of loads of kids off the local estate, and had created some great connections with local families. But I think it was trying to help the church to see, yeah, what would it take for a family actually to really kind of appear on a Sunday, you know, not appear, but, you know, sort of actually make it all the way through to kind of coming to faith in Jesus and becoming part of this church family. And that was actually really helpful, but as a kind of almost like a sort of, not a thought experiment, just kind of something to be praying about together, because it meant the changes that we made weren't changes just for the sake of change, but there was a reason behind it. And it was actually for the sake of people they didn't even know yet, but they kind of, we knew were there.
It strikes me that would be a good question for any church to be asking. It's interesting what you're describing, John, because you're describing some things that are structural. Can I say that? You know what I mean by that? You know, in terms of governance and having the right things in place. And you're describing some things which seem a bit more philosophical. They're a bit more about how we might do things, culture and imagining and dreaming a little bit, what ifs. And it seems to me there's a place for both of those things in any church life, actually. It's not, this isn't about revitalization. This is about church life in general. We need the structural stuff on which to hang everything else. That's really important. But we also need the ability to dream dreams and imagine, you know, what might it take for someone to come from nothing and come to, you know, serving as a leader in the church. Both of those are important, aren't they, Graham?
Absolutely. And particularly if in some of these sort of replant situations, there may well be a constitution and statement of faith in place already. Some of those might need updating. in your case, obviously they weren't. And without them, as you rightly say, how are we making decisions? What do we stand for? So that kind of skeleton is needed, but then to kind of flesh out, how do we work as a church? And I think particularly that idea of envisioning people to kind of go, well, what would it take for someone to come in, the people we'd love to come in, and to recognize that as the driving force behind any kind of changes, and it would feel different. That gives it real purpose. Rather than, we're not just talking about our preferences.
Yeah.
We're talking about what serves our community.
Absolutely.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. I think one of the interesting things I kind of found was that, you know, it would be early on, you'd come in and say, and people were expecting answers, like, okay, what are the changes that are going to make this work? And of course, I didn't really know what would be the changes in that sense. But I think it's almost creating a culture in which it's okay just to have a go. As long as we're not losing grasp of the gospel here, but we've put in place some healthy systems and structures and what we just are convinced is healthy for a local church, then actually just having some space together to just try some stuff and it be okay for it not to
work. Did you try things that didn't work?
No, of course not. I mean, it was about 18 months, I would say, before we really began to see significant connections with people in the local community that were meaningful. We did lots of door-to-door work. We did lots of basically, I mean, it's a big kind of sprawling suburban council estate. And so there's loads of opportunity just to try anything that will build a bridge. But some things were not great, you know.
Just tell us briefly, what's the story since then, since that sort of 18 months, and then we'll dig into some particular areas.
Yeah, so I think the season after that was really fruitful for us, which was a wonderful thing, a real answer to prayer. And then after 5 years, we kind of changed the name and kind of said, this is who we are now. And then it really was just the business of be in a local church in this community, you know, a church for Northfield, as best as we possibly could be, which is the kind of process then of sort of incremental change that you go through all the time as a church. We employed an assistant pastor. He joined us fairly early on, and then we employed family's worker. It was actually,
where did all the money for that come from,
John? Well, good question. I can't quite remember now where it all came from. I mean, sort of some of it was external, you know, grants and stuff that we got. The church had a little bit of money,
right?
And that gave us a little bit of a window early on, which again is another great reason to church revitalization, is because actually you are put into work kind of kingdom assets.
Yeah, it's often a building.
It's often a building, you know, it's often some money, that kind of thing. So, it was possible, but it was all on a shoestring, really. Okay. But then COVID kind of hit. and then at that point, I was kind of called to City Church.
Graham has these three ingredients of successful church plants: vision, leadership, core team. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just talk us through each of those very briefly, how those elements related to the work that went on.
Yeah.
Well, you know, just let's be one of those leadership. So it was obviously you were a new ingredient, and then the elder on the ground.
Yeah.
Particular things you and he had to work through together.
Yeah, I mean, we had to work through, I guess, all of those things that we've kind of already mentioned. But I suppose, in particular, we worked quite hard to reinstate an eldership, a plural eldership, which we hadn't had the church hadn't had for a season. And then it had a kind of leadership team, which was predominantly deacons and others. And then Tony was kind of the last remaining elder. And so we moved back to a model of elders and deacons, but with some clarity around what each of those meant. Yeah. But I think that was quite important. And interestingly, what we did was we actually, so it was Tony and myself, we appointed someone from the original church family as an elder. It was my father-in-law. And then...
Still talking?
Are we recording at this point? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, actually, it was a joy. It was genuinely, it was a joy that we got to serve together in that way. And then someone from the new core team as well came. Yeah. So that then we were four. And I guess, you know, we worked quite hard at that.
Can I just play back something that both of you have said? We're going to run out of time, I know, but I think this is important. Yeah. You mentioned a word, and you've mentioned, sorry, Graham, I'm pointing at you. You mentioned a word, Graham. You mentioned a word, John. You both talked about gentleness, doing things gently, because you've got an existing group of people who have done things a certain way. How important is that characteristic in leadership of these kinds? I personally think it's a fruit of the spirit. It's important in all kinds of leadership. but how essential is it to this kind of revitalization, this kind of replant, to have that characteristic?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think it's a qualification for leadership general.
Yeah.
And I think that it is important because you're not imposing a new church onto an old church.
Okay.
You are together moving into a new place.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a very different thing. You have to take everyone with you as best as you can. I mean, you can't take everyone with you. That's the reality. And we haven't got time for those stories, I'm sure. But if all you ever do is, in a sense, lead the new team, you know, and lose the church family that is already there and has welcomed you in this way, you're not really revitalizing a church.
You're imposing
a kind of new church onto an old thing, which is not the same.
Just to say on leadership in replants, it can look slightly different, can't it? Sometimes you'll have what you have, which is a combined leadership, which I think it's always the ideal.
Yeah.
You began with one from the old, one from the new, another one of each. In some instances, I've known situations where actually almost part of the condition of going is someone of the old stepping down.
Yes.
Because all those conversations have recognized there is such difference in vision and so on. And sometimes very gracefully people say, you know, I recognize I need to, my time's gone here.
Yeah.
And sometimes maybe you come in, there is no leadership, and you come in, it's just new leaders.
Yeah.
So just
to
say that can look quite different.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I would say church revitalization is a spectrum, really. Yeah. And at one end, you've got, in a sense, the work of revitalization that every pastor is involved in, regardless of how big the church is or where it is on the bell curve or anything else. There's always a work of kind of gentle revitalization that is necessary. And then at the very other end, you've got a church that is replanted, which actually closes, in a sense, and then starts again.
Yeah.
And then you've got everything in between.
Sure.
And what determines where you are on that spectrum is, I think, basically, it's context. It's all context.
Yeah. Would you have still done it if it was just you? You talked about these sort of other members of the core team coming in. Would you have still gone for it?
We committed before anyone else did.
Okay.
Yeah. And I actually think it is difficult for people to commit to something they can't see or imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a little bit different with a church plant because you've got a blank sheet of paper in a sense. And even though, like, about 10 minutes in, that blank sheet of paper is probably like kind of, you know, filled with all sorts of scroll. The reality is, in a church revitalization, it's never a blank sheet of paper. You're beginning with something that's kind of full of writing, and you've got to discern that together. So I think it's unfair sometimes to ask everyone to kind of commit in. But what I think you might, I was with a church on Saturday, and they, for the induction of their pastor, and it's a church again beginning a new chapter in its life. That's the way we're talking about it in that context, but very much a kind of on that spectrum of church revitalization. And one family has committed to go with them, but there are two other families as well who are looking in. I think they were there, and they were sort of, they're considering it, but I think it's okay, I think, for people just to need a little bit more before they jump in. But I think as a leader, I felt it was important just to commit and just say, we're here for the long haul, as long as the Lord would have us.
Just on that core group, that's another key ingredient, which is often quite different to a straight mother-daughter type plant. You've described instances where there's new leadership and some new core team coming in.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get a new leader coming with quite a big core team, even bigger than the group,
you know,
15 of them, 30 of us, and then they could feel a bit swamped and so on. I know that wasn't your story, but reflections on just how you manage the combining of those two groups.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a little bit of time with those who came kind of on their own. So actually, if I remember rightly, for a few months, we met as a little house group just as the new team coming in.
Right.
And actually part of that was me just saying, let's just think about what this is going to need, what posture is going to be needed for us as we join this family. And love this church family that's already here. I think, it just completely depends on context. I think actually the more folk that come with you up to a point, the easier culture change is if they're the right kind of people. And actually you can change culture quite quickly that way. And even with just the few that we had, I was so thankful they came with us. And I was so, so thankful that they were kind of the first adopters really on in terms of a lot of the change that took place. But I've certainly known, you know, contexts where it's been a much, much bigger team. It just depends on what's needed, what's possible, and then it's I think up to the leadership just to work that through in a way that means people aren't sidelined.
John, thank you so much. We're out of time. We could listen to this story forever. I think it's a great story, isn't it? I hope you've been energized, actually, as I have, by hearing it. And it immediately gets me thinking about some of the places there are around us. You know, we've got towns around us that have very little in the way of Christian witness. Some of the forgotten industrial towns of the East Midlands. And just thinking, you know, maybe there is a little group of handful, you know, faithful believers who are struggling on and what might be possible. So it's energized me. And I think we do need to dream dreams, don't we? We've got to dream some of these dreams and think what might be possible.
We believe in a God who loves to raise the dead and breathe new life into
that's
dying
exactly
things.
Right. John, thank you. Graham, thank you so much for joining us. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please do listen out for the next episode. And also, if you rate and review it, it helps people to find it. So please do that and join us next time.